Hello, and welcome to the Hearth and Hedge podcast. My name is Amberly, and I'm so pleased to have you join me today. On today's episode, I have a new guest. She is the author of 8 published books, 2 more on the way soon. She is a witch, a priestess, an international teacher, and initiate in the reclaiming tradition. She is a devotee of Aphrodite, Hecate, the Norns, and Iris. She has been practicing magic for over 20 years. Iris Anya is passionate about the idea that life is, and humans are, love spells, ever experiencing a dance of desire and connection, moving in and out of the heart, but always returning to love. Please welcome the very, very interesting and lovely Iris Anya Moon. How are you doing today?
I am doing really well. How are you?
I am great. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So we'll start with the beginning.
I love it.
What are you drinking today?
Right now, I can actually have I feel very good about this answer. I have water.
Fantastic.
Right now.
That is a great answer. That is a great answer.
Probably one of the first times you'll ever hear me say that. But today it is true.
Fantastic. And are you reading or watching anything exciting?
Oh, so right now I'm writing a book. So I am knee deep in Greek mythology. And so I have many books that I am looking at right now. So I think that kind of counts.
It does.
One of the books is The Gods of Olympus. That's the one. Yeah, The Gods of Olympus by Barbara, probably screw this up, Graziosi. So that's the one I've turned to in the last day or two.
Fantastic. Have you read the new book by George Lizzo's, The Secrets of Greek Mysticism?
It's in my pile to be part of my research for that section of the book, which I saved the magic part and ritual.
Perfect.
So. Yeah, it's on there. I went on a little bit of a book buying binge and that was included.
That's a good binge to have. I actually have an interview with George next week.
Great.
That's the only reason I had, the only reason I could ask about it.
Love it.
So this is one of my favorite questions because I always like to hear this. Do you have a favorite metaphysical book or author?
Oh, that's hard. That's hard. As an author now, knowing what people go through, I want to say I love all of them because I know that it's such a thing. I would say that one of the books that was instrumental in my sort of coming to witchcraft and spirituality and stuff was A Book of Shadows by Phyllis Carrot.
Okay.
And I think because I am a reclaiming initiate, I should say Spiral Dance by Starhawk.
So, oh, I was just reading that today. Again, for probably the 80th time.
I know, minus waterlogged because I spilled something on it at some point.
Oh, no. Yeah, this is actually my third copy because people borrow things and then I don't know what happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously need them more than I do.
Yes.
All right. Do you have a favorite mundane book or author?
My favorite author in the quote unquote mundane, but I think that she's also pretty magical, is Joan Didion. I think I will go back to her stuff over and over. And her one about grief, which of course the name is escaping me in this moment, but that one was really helpful at a particular time of my life. And I can see it in my head, but I can't make out the title. Of it. It's not Blue Nights. It's the other one.
So there is Play It As It Lays.
It's the Year of Magical Thinking.
There you go. I knew I could
there
help.
There we go. Put on the spot. I could have looked that up.
That's okay.
Yeah, the Year of Magical Thinking is gorgeous. It's about the concurrent death of her daughter and her husband in a really short period of time. And she's just got a writing style that I absolutely adore.
Is that what inspired you to write your book about grief?
No, I think grief inspired me to write my book about grief. And I mean, I would like to say that she probably was in there somewhere because the way she handled that was so great. But my book is poetry. So mm-hmm. a bit different, but I could write a book on that too. So I think I wrote because I just needed something to help me make sense of things. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really thinking about it. It was never a book. Here's how.
Yeah. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, I've spoken to you about which books I was sent by your publisher, and they are Artemis and Gaia. But I do notice that you have quite a few about different goddesses.
I do.
And the Norns. What makes you choose who you choose?
Yeah, that's a good question. So ideally, all of my books are about gods I've either worked with or gods that I want to work with. So Aphrodite and I have been together for a while. Iris, there were no books on Iris until I wrote one. And I thought, because she is my namesake, that should probably happen. And I actually have my books in front of me, so I make sure I don't miss anybody. The Norns I worked with for a very long time. And I hadn't seen any books that had like magical practices with them. So I wanted to write about them. And then Gaia, I got asked to write about Gaia mm-hmm. for the Earth Spirit series, because it's about environmental activism and the such. And so I wrote about her. And one of my things is really about building relationships. And so that is about building a relationship with Gaia so that we might build the relationships to ourselves, which might in turn help us save the world and the Earth. And Artemis, I ran into her, I think, when I was a very young, almost witch person. I had this really intense spiritual experience with a deer in the woods when I was running or something. And then she's shown up at a couple of other things that I've done since. And so I wanted to write about her to sort of honor that. And all of my books have some sort of through line in them of sure, something that I feel is important to share in the world right now. So
fantastic. I love that. I'm going to take you back to this spiritual experience with the deer. So you said you were an almost witch at that point. What was the turning point?
So here's what's funny. So my bio says 20 plus years, which is true. That also makes it real hard to remember things. And so all of these facts may be muddled. But what I would say is that at that period of my life, which was about 20 plus years ago, many years ago, mm-hmm. and I was living in a completely different place, I was starting to get into sort of new age things because I was taking certain classes with some folks. And then mm-hmm. they introduced me to a group of, they were studying Native American spirituality. There was a white woman who was tasked by folks to bring it to other white folks. And so I was part of that for a really long time. And then I was like, I don't think I belong here. And I went online and found Wicca back in the day and on the websites with music that would play in the background. And I was sort of, the panpipes in the background, right? And I very visceral memory. And so I found that. And then I think I was just sort of opening up to things. And so I was beginning to notice things as being more than just what they were. And I just could feel this opening when I saw this deer, was just sort of acknowledged each other. And I was like, oh, there's something here. It's the same way I got my name, too, is that I was in the middle of making a decision and a huge rainbow dropped from the sky. And I did what any witch does, and I Googled it, and I went, Goddess of Rainbow. I didn't know. And then there came Iris. And so it's, for me, I think a lot of this is just about like being present. And I was just present in a moment, and I kind of followed it.
That's great. That's great. When you said the websites with the music in the background, that I felt that in my soul. I had forgotten about that.
Oh, it is so, the panpipes and the, you couldn't figure out how to turn it off, and yeah. all of the live journal and things. And
yes, and mm-hmm. the sparkly backgrounds.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
The various uh-huh. borders of vines and stuff. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I very visceral.
Oh, that's so funny. I was talking to someone the other day about how a lot of the folks in the pagan community still have websites like that. And how frustrating it is because we want people to take us seriously, but we're still, you know, technologically living in the 90s.
Yeah, unfortunately, website design isn't in most of the books that we look at. So
that is true. That is true.
That's not where we focus a lot. Some of us have moved and tried to do that, but
your website is beautiful.
Thank you.
I'm looking at it right now, so I can tell you.
I also had some help too. I also called in reinforcements when I'm like, I don't know what to do now.
So. And that is a good thing because that means you're resourceful.
Someone else's magic. I'm like, who in the community might be able to help? And
yeah.
Just do the thing and let me update it. I can do that.
That's funny.
Mostly.
So this question always is a little bit of a hard one. Do you have a favorite book that you've written?
My favorite book that I would say that my favorite book, and it's like asking, you know, what your favorite child is, which mm-hmm. is so trite, but also true. Favorite book in terms is, I would say Aphrodite. Aphrodite is my favorite. But they all have different meanings to them. And a couple that I'm going to write in the future, I'm also are going to probably contend. So mm-hmm. we'll see.
Do you have a problem child?
I, this is a funny, Aphrodite is actually also my problem child because I wrote that very early on in my writing and mm-hmm. looking back on it now, it's good. I mean, it's fine, but it, mm-hmm. I miss some things that I wish were in there, but that's the horrible part about being an author. Once it's in print, you're like, you know, you see all the things that you could have said. So I'm hopeful that I can expand on her at one point. I teach a lot of classes with her in which I sort of fill in gaps or tell people how I've changed. You know, some mm-hmm. of these books I wrote for like 5 years ago at this point. And so I'm a different person and right. I have better research skills and my magical practice is just deeper, which is not right. to say these aren't helpful and wonderful. People have gotten a lot out of them. I do love them too. And they're a good starting point, I would mm-hmm. say.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's true about all books. You know, you should use any of them as a starting point and then do your own research and make your own experiences in order to grow.
And I think that books are definitely a snapshot, mm-hmm. you know, because a lot of books, you know, what some folks don't recognize is that you write them a year or so before they come out, or sometimes longer. And so I wrote Aphrodite, like I wrote my first book, was actually in my Facebook memories today. I finished writing my first book, Reclaiming Witchcraft, in May of 2019. And mm-hmm. we're speaking at the beginning of May in 2024. So things change. And even in that 1 year, things are different. You know, right. I didn't have all the, you know, by the time Claiming Witchcraft came out, that, I think it was that fall, we'd actually changed a really big thing in our tradition. And it was wrong in my book by the time the book came out. And what happens?
Yeah.
We evolve.
Interesting. Interesting. So what do you love the most about writing?
You know, I got into a really good writing flow yesterday, so I feel like I can say this today. Not all days can I say this. Oh, what do I love most? I love when I get into a flow that brings me through a series of questions and through a series of memories that all seem to suddenly fit together. Like, not to be too earnest or anything like that. Oh, all of these things that I've been doing have led to this particular moment. And that's how it feels. Yesterday, it absolutely felt like that. I'm writing a book on the Greek pantheon, and which is no easy task, I have learned. And there are a lot of stories that have a lot of violence in them. Mm-hmm. And when you're researching a book like this, you have to read it over and over and over. And it was getting to be a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided yesterday, I'm going to include a section of talking about this and talking about what other people smarter than me have said about this to contextualize it and things like that. And while mm-hmm. that sounds kind of nerdy and boring, it excited me and made me feel like this is a book that's answering questions that I would have wanted to know when I first started this.
Mm-hmm.
It's addressing things that have always made me feel a little icky. And I hadn't sought out those answers or hadn't seen them.
Mm-hmm.
So I love those moments of, oh, I just surprised myself with something that I found. Gosh, I really hope this is something that a reader can take heart to and take it in and decide what they think.
Interesting. I love that. That's great. You know, I hate it sometimes when I get anecdotes about my life, but, you know, it's my podcast, so I'm allowed to do it.
I go for it.
For a while, a few years ago, I actually worked with the National NAGPRA program, which you may be aware of what that is. But for those of my listeners who don't, it's the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, which basically requires by law that museums and institutions that have Native American sacred objects and human remains catalog them, announce them to the tribes. And then ultimately they're supposed to return them right to their rightful tribe. And when you read day after day about just hundreds of human remains, and, you know, some of them are children and babies, and it's exhausting. And I mean, I would come home crying sometimes.
Yeah.
And when there was this, I think it was Tlingit blanket, got repatriated, I sent my husband the announcement, like the newspaper clipping about it. And he actually, he got it framed for me. And he was like, you know, I know you feel very unappreciated, but you did this, you know, and mm-hmm. so you do have to think about, like, the people that you are affecting, because it does matter.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you are having to deal with the icky, crappy stuff, somebody's mm-hmm. going to take that and be affected in a positive way by it. So.
Absolutely. Or have a small moment of getting to think about something that they hadn't thought of before. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. That is why we write, or why we do a lot of things, hopefully.
Right.
I think especially when you have a lot of passion about a thing, that it is because it's something you want to bring forward and say, hey, have you thought of this too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty profound thing.
Yes, it's hard to go through the triggering part, mm-hmm. but, and I didn't really recognize it until I was sort of done with that writing session for the day. And I guess I hadn't known a lot about Poseidon until that moment. And I don't want to know any of it anymore. Mm-hmm. But I texted a friend and I texted them and said, well, now I know that Poseidon is a insert your favorite curse word. And yeah, and then I just couldn't like get settled for a second, but then I was like, there's something I can do though. Mm-hmm. I do have control of what's in here. And also I got to see a whole bunch of people in journals and various master's theses talk about the same thing and say, I got questions about this.
That's great. I'm now going to have to, I look forward to your new book, but I'm going to have to look up Poseidon because I have, you know, FOMO, even though I know that I'm not going to want to read what I'm reading.
I tried to include a couple stories of everybody and I could not mm-hmm. find some that weren't some sort of assault.
Ah.
So that was something.
Hmm. It's like when somebody tells you, you know, don't look at the train wreck, but you can't stop.
don't read the comments. Oh, I read the comments.
Of course. Oh, goodness. Goodness. You know, that I read a book about Persephone. It's just called Persephone recently. Well, it's been a couple years now, but the author, who I can't think of at the moment, kind of gave a different perspective on how Persephone was taken into the underworld and made it more about a story of women empowerment. Yeah. And that she chose to leave her mother, who was overbearing, and, you know, and become her own person. And it was nice to just look at it from that point of view, even though I know that's not how it was written. And look at it that way.
Well, I think that that is one of the versions that I know, too. So I don't think it's actually too far off. But we have to remember that a lot of these things were translated by old white dudes. And that is, you know, their lens is their lens. But that's true. I think that I heard about the difference of the Persephone story from, I think, Mary Lefkowitz. And there's a, or no, Charlize Brennan. It's a book called The Lost Goddesses. Mm. And there's definitely a little piece in there. So I did remember that title. I don't have Wicca in front of me right now, but I wrote about this in a book. I wrote about it at some point. I cannot remember because I didn't like none of mine are about Persephone. No.
Yeah, that's okay.
Who knows? It's somewhere. I mean, somewhere. I said it.
Who knows? That's funny. I've actually never asked this question, but so for a lot of my authors, or I mean, I'm sorry, a lot of my listeners, you know, obviously I'm very book centric on my, my podcast, but I do know quite a few people that are aspiring authors. Do you have any, advice for them?
Yeah. I mean, I can tell the story of how I came to this very strange and unexpected place. And there might be some advice in there. So, I mean, I've been writing forever, as a lot of writers will say. I've been writing since I was a kid, et cetera, et cetera. How I got into this was that I was writing a lot and posting a lot of things on my social media. And, you know, my random thoughts and magic-y stuff. I'd been a priestess for a while and like to share magic-y stuff. And I realized at some point I wanted to be published under, you know, my magical name and all of that. And I think I, at some point on some level, sort of opened myself up to that and suddenly saw opportunities. So Moon Books had some announcement posting something that was, you know, oh, we're compiling anthologies. If you would like to offer something to it, we'd love for you to, you know, send something in. That's kind of how it started for me, was finding different anthologies or announcements about that and submitting to those. And I've written, I don't know how many for them at this point, but a lot. And eventually they said, you know, we don't have a book on reclaiming witchcraft yet. And I said, oh. And so I proposed one. That's how it happened.
Fantastic.
So I think being open to things and then also just writing what you want to write about. I think that that is probably the most common advice, but also it's good advice.
Yeah.
Just keep writing. That's what I've done like my whole life, is just to keep doing it and also to share it. Make, you know, do the public thing, get a blog, whatever. Social media is great. Say stuff online, on a video. But for me, if you want to become an author, it is just continuously writing, even when you don't want to do it, even when you don't think anyone's going to read it, even when you do think people are going to read it, which is actually scarier to have people read your stuff. Wasn't expecting that. But, you know, just keep doing that. And also make connections. Like, talk to other, you know, compliment other authors. Tell them what you liked about their book. There are so many different ways I've gotten connected on different things just by interacting with folks. Because authors, surprise, we are human. And we also, well, human with our own egos and everything. And it's a very solitary process a lot of the time. So
yeah,
interact.
Yeah.
You would be surprised with what will happen when you do that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I actually, like, I don't only interview authors, but I feel like authors are the more fun ones, you know?
Yeah. Well, you have to be a little bit fun in order to keep doing this, I think. Sometimes you have to, you know, there's so many stories of authors who drink. I don't drink, but I, you know,
I think that it's,
you have to look at the world in a different way. And I think that gives us very strange senses of humor and mm-hmm. also the ability to talk about a whole bunch of things.
Do you see yourself ever writing fiction?
You know, no, I don't think so. I've been asked that a lot. I think that I do not have the brain technology to keep up with a lot of characters,
mm-hmm.
which is funny given that I'm writing about the Greek pantheon, because there's about a million in there, but they're not, I'm not creating them. So,
right.
No, I say never say never. Who knew I was going to do any of this? Not me. So I think it's always possible, but I feel more of a memoir coming on than I do, or more nonfiction things than I do fiction. I mean, love the fiction, but there are great people who could do that.
That's true. There are a lot of them.
Great.
A lot of them, a lot of them. I'm sorry. I keep looking around, but I keep thinking I hear my cat and my dog hates my cat and he's next to me. So, you know, if she comes around, I have to make sure that he's not going to eat her.
I feel that. my cats have wandered in and out so far. So.
Yes. Yes. Cats are fun.
They are. Children.
Yeah, exactly. They're little four-legged children. So I always ask my guests if they would like to share a spell, ritual, or recipe. Do you have something that you'd like to share today?
So, I do. I mean, it's always interesting to decide what to choose. But, so my book on Artemis, Artemis, Goddess of the Wild Hunt and Sovereign Heart, came out, there it is, I got mine too. And she came out at the end of March, beginning of April, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I would love to read one of the practices that I feel is a little bit more general and more accessible, even if you are not into Artemis. So
fantastic. Great.
Yeah. So one of the things I like to do in my books is like cultivate a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan of folks getting to know deity in the ways that make sense to them. I get some suggestions, but you don't have to stick with that. But it's more about how do I build a relationship versus how do I, you know, prostrate myself in front of a deity and ask for things.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's more about reciprocity and all of that. So a lot of the practices in here are self practices in order to connect with the energy that's related to that particular deity.
Mm-hmm.
And this magical practice is tapping into your own wild heart. And I'm just going to probably read it word for word because I did write this, so it should sound like me. So, you can relate to Artemis by finding yourself in the wild. Travel out into places that are away from people and responsibilities. If you're not in a place to do this, you can also find her wildness between sidewalk cracks and the insistence of nature among the concrete. Or you can find pictures and videos of the wild online to help you travel outside of where you are. Once you've arrived in a place of the wild, I invite and encourage you to open up your senses. You might look around. You might close your eyes to hear or smell things. You might choose to touch the plants and ground. You might choose to open your mouth to begin to taste the air. However you choose, find a place that is comfortable for you. Find a place you can return to regularly. If possible, daily practice is best, but we are not all able to have such access. When you're doing the work inside, you can find a specific video or picture you return to, as well as a way that you sit and be with the space. As you find your place in space, sit and take it all in. Take in the way the light falls, the way the temperature changes, and the way that things move when you're sitting there. Become a part of the place and become a part of the wild. Notice how things interact with you or don't. Notice how you interact with the wild or don't. It can help to allow anything you were thinking about before to fall to the ground. Step into the present with a breath, by settling your heart or by relaxing your chest. Once you arrive in a quieter place, you might sense the way your awareness can expand from your body. There is no need to move. Just feel the way your awareness can unfold from where you are and out into the space you are in. Notice what happens when you widen and expand. Notice how much more you can perceive and know. Notice how close you are to the wild and the unexpectedness of it all. Some people like to document what they notice as they noticed it, or even wait until you are done to write down what stood out to you. It helps to stay in this wild wideness for a few minutes to sense all that you like, but there is no specific time frame that is best. I would only suggest you stay long enough to sense into the wild, but not so long that you lose interest. Once you begin to get distracted, and you will, in the beginning, you can bring your awareness back to your body and slowly return to the present moment. This is a practice of connecting with the wild, as you are always a part of the wild. The world might tell you otherwise, but you are just as much of the forest as you are in them. When you can practice connecting in, you will begin to find your own wild heart and all that it knows and can teach you.
That's fantastic. I love that. I love the thought about how nature is reclaiming between the cracks of the concrete, because it really does.
I love it. I feel like it's just, you know, sometimes I jokingly say that, you know, some of my things are done through spite. And I think that that is nature sometimes. Like, you are going to try everything, but I am still going to bust through and show you that I can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, we think that we have it under control, but
alas, do we want to have it under control? Come on. I don't know if we're the best people for that. I don't know.
That's right. So I'm looking at the bottom of your writing page on your website. And you have several other books. The book on grief, Modern Witchcraft with the Greek Gods, Gorgon's Guide. So on and so forth. Are these all books that you contributed to?
Most of those are. So
fantastic.
Most of those are things that I've contributed to, I've been asked to contribute to, or I've submitted something and hope for the best. And the grief one, the grief is the poetry book that was a bunch of folks who are neurodivergent. We wrote stories from our strange little perspectives. And I wrote a piece for that that's very, what a cute cat, a little unexpected. It was about my experience of grief as a child who watched the Challenger explosion in school.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as someone who got diagnosed with ADHD, like about a couple years ago, which makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. Also, there's probably some other things going on, but that's another day. One of the things that I very, very much so remember from watching the Challenger explode is that I went home and my mom was like, you know, I don't remember what she asked, but I said, wow, that explosion was so beautiful. Because it just... like I saw the colors and I saw the shape and that was what I commented on first.
Right.
And she said something to the effect of people died. And it just didn't. Like I was a kid.
Right.
And also it just didn't make sense to me. And so I talked about the idea that, you know, sometimes we experience it different from different brains and sometimes we focus on different things and it's all just part of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I don't remember what I was doing when that happened. I was alive.
Yes. Good.
But I don't know. I don't know what was going on in my life at that time. That's interesting.
I remember being in school. And I remember, I think I'd really remember it because I felt disappointment from my mom and I didn't quite understand why.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. That's fair.
Seems a kid.
It's difficult having a disappointment from your mother.
Oh my gosh. Tis. It is.
Yes. It is. Yeah. And now I'm a mom and I have that, you know, mom eyebrow and.
Oh yeah.
I'm not angry. I'm disappointed.
That still hits me in a way. Like my mom died. Part of the brief poetry that I've written is inspired from her death. And so that I could still see that face in my head. So,
yeah. Yeah. Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Effect that things like that have on our lives.
I think it would, I mean, to really like bring it back too, like words have impact and our experiences really do stand out and influence the way we see the world. You know, my little bio says, you know, a dance of life is a love song, right? And it's, you know, we're always sort of coming into connection and leaving again because that's what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So tarot or oracle, which one do you prefer?
I'm going to do tarot because I have it here. And okay. I'm not a real big read tarot person, but I do use it. I can't do everything. I've decided. So at some point.
Yeah. Forest, you stay.
Sorry. Hear that. But there's cat oracling going on. Or puppy oracling. One of the two. Oh, what a good guard puppy.
He is
very protective.
Yeah, the cat's like the size of his, you know, snout. So
I saw that too. This is a wee little one.
Yeah, she's tiny.
Cats
she's fully guessing. Grown, just tiny.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do have my tarot deck. My favorite tarot deck is the Wild Unknown. I've had it since it came out. I have version one. I have version two. I think. I don't remember which one you are. Probably version two. I also really like the Modern Witch Tarot, but it is not getting a lot of use, so it's a little too stiff for my hands. Mm. So it's very beautiful, but it's not quite broken in like this one.
Yeah, I understand that.
Weaves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I will grab a card and let's grab one off of, well, I usually do threes. I'm a big, you know, the norms are not really past, present, and future, but close enough.
Right.
And this is our question. Oh, there's cats. That's cute. All right. We don't do reverse cards because I know the world is nuts enough without having to reverse tarot cards. So the first card that I got was the Eight of Cups, which is a whole bunch of broken. And a whole bunch of broken. So, but then we move on to Justice, which has two cats on it.
Yay,
Justice. And then we move into the Four of Wands, which is to govern us again, which feels incredibly appropriate for the political scenario in this day and age.
Yes.
The brokenness, justice sort of tipping in and sort of bringing us back together. Mm-hmm. That feels very powerful in this particular moment, but also a story we could probably say at any time in history.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So I know sometimes I feel silly sort of saying, well, in this moment, I was like, in every moment, this is actually happening. Whether we know it or not, that's a whole other thing.
That is true. That is true.
So that is my very quick tarot reading.
That was perfect. And actually, that was, I'm hoping that is prophetic because we are definitely in the Eight of Cups scenario, in my opinion, currently in our political climate. And hopefully justice is actually going to do the things.
Right.
And it would be nice to have togetherness again, because there is a lot of division and hate and anger right now.
I agree. And it seems like, at least for the way this card looks, like the togetherness is like sort of the all the eye in there too, mm-hmm. that with this togetherness, there is a way of, there's a way to see in ways we can't without this part. So, yeah. Which is, yes, please, everyone, yes. Let's, how can we rise up together? Because, you know, sometimes it is a numbers game.
Yeah.
Right? And watching all the colleges right now is amazing.
Yes. Yes. I did see that there are some Native Americans in Arizona that were arrested during a smudging ceremony on one of the campuses, which is a direct violation of federal law. So we'll see how that pans out. I'm standing in solidarity with them and with all of the protesters.
Absolutely.
Just craziness. This whole, all of it. I don't really like to get too political on my podcast, but I would be remiss if I didn't bring it up and say, you know, people need to vote. You don't have to agree with what I have to say, but if you don't use your voice, then you can't complain.
Well, and the cards started it, to be fair. And so
That's true.
You know, wild unknown. We just talked about opening your wild heart into the wild unknown and all this. And I think that, you know, I mean, I'm reclaiming witchcraft is a very activist oriented tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talk about stuff a lot. I mean, I've already started with, you know, like the Me Too movement, basically. Mm-hmm. I talked about that already. And I mean, free Palestine. So that's,
You know, I don't know a lot about the reclaiming tradition because I honestly have read very little about it. So, I think I might pick up that book.
Some of it's out of date. So
that's okay. What Starhawk wrote is out of date, but that's okay. We still love her.
That is very true. Absolutely. She would nod and laugh too at that. So
yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a lot of really great resources online too for reclaiming. And so, another one of my books, Honoring the Wild, was all about stories from various activists in our tradition, stories mm-hmm. and magic and things like that. So that does have the up-to-date Principles of Unity, which is our sort of guiding document. And it changed right after I turned in my reclaiming book. And so, which is great. It is, the little book is about how we're an evolving tradition.
Yes.
So,
that's great.
And we'll probably change it again. So the way it goes.
That is the way it goes. Good. Fantastic. So I have a new question for you. I'm assuming you have an altar somewhere in your home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you had to choose three things, only three things to put on an altar, what would they be?
I'm trying not to look at my altar right now for what my favorite things are. If I only had three things, one would be, sorry, Iris, a statue to Aphrodite and a bunch of roses. Anyway, let's see the observation. Yeah, I would say a bottle of water from a sacred place. I'm going to keep that open, though, because I do have a little teeny bit of water from Delphi.
That's nice.
I didn't go. A friend brought it back. So
that was really nice of them.
It was really sweet. Yeah. I think those mean everything.
Those are good. That's a good choice. Mm-hmm. I like it. I like mm-hmm. it. I always like to hear what people have on their altars.
Yeah, I have many. Many altars. Yeah. Aphrodite is a being of many desires and stuff.
Yeah, I feel like, in a way, the house, the whole home is an altar.
Absolutely.
I need to clean my altar.
Well, I feel that. I think usually on the solstices is when I change. Like, the solstices of the equinoxes, I will change my stuff or sort of look at it and go like, all right, do you remember what that is? We should probably get rid of it if you don't.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, my alters also change depending when I'm writing a book, because sometimes I do alters for my books. And so the greats are all downstairs, which is where all the books are too.
That's fantastic. Well, you know what? I really appreciate you taking the time to be with me today. And I know that you have been extremely patient with my schooling and my children and, you know, just life in general. And I really appreciate you very much.
I totally understand. I think that what you should hear is that my schedule is such that sometimes when things don't happen, I'm like, oh, easy. So sometimes it's a really good moment. So I do think that that is also not true.
So fair.
All is well, and I appreciate it. And people have lives, and let's meet everybody where they're at, as opposed to getting, you know, we're all fine at best, at least most of us.
That's right. Well, I do appreciate you very much. And I hope we get to chat again soon when your next book comes out.
Yeah. So can I say what's coming after this for people who want to hear what else is happening?
Yes, absolutely.
So, I have written 8 books. There's a bunch of them. And I'm a pseudo for real quick. Reclaiming Witchcraft, Aphrodite. I'm going to tell shorter titles. Health and Well-Being, Iris, Honoring the Wild, The Norns, Gaia, Artemis, Circe is coming next in the fall. In the spring of 2025 is Hestia.
Fantastic.
And the Greek Pantheon, if I get it done when I think I'm going to get it done, it'll be later in 2025. And that is twice as big as my other books for obvious reasons. And then after that, I'm contracted to write about the Muses. And then Hecate.
Wow.
Now Hecate is going to be number 13, which I love to no end.
Oh, that's actually fantastic. I love it.
Between you and me and everybody. I'm excited
about Hestia.
That was fun
to write.
There's
not a lot written about Hestia, so.
I did not know tons about her when I wrote this, but I got this call that I wanted to write a book that was about building sustainable community. Mm-hmm. And she was really like, hi, can I help you? And so I love her because now I'm getting all the context of all the Greeks all at once, that she is the Olympian that's like, you all are just too much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want any of your shenanigans. I am going to step away from the Olympians. Dionysus can do it. I do not need to be here. Oh, I see you.
That's fantastic. You know, I'm actually in the middle of my own community situation. I'm getting ordained, and I hadn't even for a second thought about talking to Hestia about it. But it makes complete sense, because the whole reason I'm doing it isn't because I just want to be I want to actually help my community. So I should
get
on
that. There's stuff in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Very exciting.
Yeah,
how exciting.
Thanks.
Do you, I will put your website in the show notes. You have classes and services as well.
I do. I have tons of things going on. Perpetually. I teach online. I also teach in person. I'm in the Bay Area, California.
Okay.
So I teach a few things there. I have an Aphrodite sort of year-long priestessing thing coming up, which I'm very excited about. People want a lot of the Aphrodite, which I don't mind. Books coming out, a couple, like I do, if you, you don't Google somebody on YouTube. If you put my name into YouTube, whatever. And if you put my name into YouTube, you'll find a whole bunch of old presentations that I've done. You'll find a trance that I led, et cetera, et cetera. So, and as you may have noticed during this podcast, I'm kind of irreverent. I can be very serious and very whatever, but also I think magic should be fun. And so you can expect that when you take stuff with.
That's awesome. I'm sorry. I'm sure you saw, I was laughing really hard.
I did.
It was
I
just because you said Google on YouTube,
and
then it was like the websites with the music in the background came back
we
to me. I was like, oh,
we just brought it all the way back around. big fan of ending in a circle.
It's a circle.
We cast a circle, like now we open it up.
That's right. That's right. It's because we're witches.
Right. That's right. It's serious magic and stuff.
Did it on purpose.
Yeah, this is, we've been planning this for. We were just really in tune with our wall heart.
That's right. That's right. We'll go with that. Well, so for the listeners, you can find all of the information on her courses. It looks like she has some in Santa Rosa and several different choices online and in person. And she's got a shop and all the information about how to contact her, and you should check her out.
Yes, thank you. I can't wait to connect with folks. I love connecting with folks, so just reach out.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Arasani. I very, very much appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the work that you're doing. It's good stuff.
Thanks. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook at The Hearth and Hedge, on my website, thehearthandhedge.com, or you can email me at thehearthandhedge@gmail.com. I also have a Patreon that can be found at patreon.com/thehearthandhedge. If you like what you hear, consider leaving a review wherever you find your podcasts. ¶¶